Principal Bhavanti Poser, John Kander, and lyricist Freda wrote "Tomorrow Belongs to Me" for their 1966 hit musical Cabaret. They were aiming for purposes of the dramaturgy to capture musically the metamorphosis of 1930s German patriotic fervor into the intolerant, insidious ideology of the National Socialists. Still, we can safely presume that the pair could never have imagined that one day a group of concerned citizens would attempt to ban the song "Tomorrow Belongs to Me" from a junior high concert, having mistaken it as an actual Nazi youth song. Yet, in May 1973, you guessed it, a headline in the New York Times proclaimed, "Great Neck School Board bars inquiry on Nazi song in concert." Great Neck, located on Long Island, and perhaps best known as the setting of F. Scott Fitzgerald's masterpiece, The Great Gatsby, is an affluent Jewish community just outside New York City. In 1973, worried parents questioned the motives behind the programming of "Tomorrow Belongs to Me" at Great Neck North Junior High. And here's a quote. "With the myriads of other choral songs available, the choice of such a number denotes at best an insensitivity, at worst something more deplorable." At the meeting, Superintendent Mortimer G. Abramowitz reassured attendants of the song's American provenance, while Board President Stanley E. Rubinstein dismissed the motion to launch an official investigation as a, quote, "holy war or witch's hunt," unquote. The scandal of Great Neck is not an isolated incident. Over the years, Kander and Depp have received many letters from upset audience members complaining about the inclusion of a real Nazi song on stage. Some have even made claims that they recalled hearing the song in Nazi Germany. On the one hand, it speaks to the remarkable skills of the songwriting team. On the other hand, the persuasive powers of the song also clearly demonstrate the vulnerability of audience members who do not always discriminate strictly between staged fiction and past realities. But how is it that a person who elects to take in a show, that is, go to see an unambiguously artistic and artificial spectacle of history on stage, become convinced of its realness? Having researched the case in Cabaret, I have identified four factors that facilitate the merging of musical theatrical fiction and perceived human memory. First, the dramaturgical position and context of "Tomorrow Belongs to Me" convincingly serves the transformation of folk song to Nazi hymn. Second, Kander and Depp relied on elements from existing folk tunes and Nazi songs to shape their number and then authenticity. Third, in Bob Fosse's film version, "Tomorrow Belongs to Me" attains a special status as the only song performed outside the Kit Kat Club, the fictional nightclub the characters frequent. And finally, fourth, the co-opting of the show tune by bands from the white power music scene since the 1980s has further muddied the waters about the song's true origin. Drawing on Ingrid Manson's concepts of perceptual agency and intermusicality, I will reconcile the contradicting interpretations of rivaling groups, that is, the authors, their critics, their defendants, and the racist opponents, and discuss the agency of the different stakeholders. Dramaturgical context. Cabaret chronicles the experiences of a young American novelist in Berlin around the time the Nazis take over Germany. For a more detailed plot synopsis, you have that in your handouts, but it's not necessary for understanding this paper. Halfway through Act 1, a group of waiters at the nightclub, the Kit Kat Club, performs "Tomorrow Belongs to Me" a cappella. The song starts out as an innocent folk tune, invoking sentimental longing for simpler times with the pastoral themes of the opening verses. However, as the piece progresses, nationalistic undercurrents emerge, displacing the initial nature-centered imagery with endless buzzwords such as fatherland or glory. When the song is reprised at the end of Act 1, the audience's perception of the song has changed. The Arcadian images are now checked for suggested Nazi metaphors, and here I have highlighted them. This process occurs simultaneously with the unfolding events on stage, where two Nazis intone the song spontaneously to voice the protest against the interracial engagement of an elderly German lady to an older Jewish gentleman. The volume increases and becomes slightly more disorganized as more and more people join in. Some audience members can easily get swept up in this frightening display of power and experience the rousing and infectious side of music through the act of singing together firsthand. In a manner, the dramaturgical arch of Tomorrow Belongs to Me replicates what happened to popular German songs as they were appropriated by the Nazi movement in the early decades of the 20th century. The most notoriously cited example is that of Friedrich Silcher's Ich weiß nicht, was soll es bedeuten, more commonly known as the Lorelei. Silcher's melodies that Heinrich Heine's eponymous poem in the style of other 19th century folk tunes, and the song entered the canon of beloved German leader and remained entrenched during the rise of the National Socialists, who were not able to completely eradicate it despite Heine's Jewishness. Inspiration or emulation? Considering how closely art imitates life in the instance of Tomorrow Belongs to Me, queries into the song's genesis gain legitimacy. Early manuscripts of Cabaret certainly suggest that Kendrick L., as well as playwright Joe Masteroff and director Hal Prince, were familiar with the Lorelei and other Nazi tunes. An early, undated draft located in the Frederick papers at the New York Public Library of the Performing Arts mentions the Club Lorelei and a record playing a song called Tomorrow Belongs to Us. Since the title of the record is neither written in all caps, the usual designation for all original song material by Candy Mandel in the draft, nor provided with any lyrics, it is plausible that this is a reference to the popular song Es zittern die Morschen Knochen. Written by Hans Baumann, the refrain goes in German, Denn heute gehört uns Deutschland und morgen die ganze Welt. It is possible that Baumann's song was casually known as Tomorrow Belongs to Us Among Americans because one of the great neck parents, William H. Gallant, refers to the same title in a letter to the editor correcting Superintendent Abramowitz's claims that Tomorrow Belongs to Me was written by John Kender and Fred Ebb. Both Tomorrow Belongs to Me and the Lorelei romanticize nature in the lyrics. Tranquil scenery and mythological folklore evoke nostalgia and sentimentality. Even though the two songs differ in form, key, and method, they share an identical head motive with a dotted neighboring note. And if you have a handout, that would be example four. I have also prepared a slide for it. The slow tempo creates a rhythmic ambiguity which allows listeners to hear the Lorelei with a waltz feel, even though it is a barcarola in 6/8. This brings it closer to the 3/4 meter of Tomorrow Belongs to Me. The most striking commonality, however, is found in bars 4-7, copied directly from the opening bars of the Lorelei. Let's listen to this.
Thank you.
While the accusations that Cannon had abused the Nazi song have proved untenable, one could argue that the composer and lyricist have invited criticism, since Tomorrow Belongs to Me appears to be partially modeled on the Lorelei. To what extent this was a conscious act, if at all, is hard to determine, but we can look at the composer and lyricist to describe the work processes. John Kander says, researching cabaret, I listened to German jazz and woodwind songs more than anything else, and then I just forgot about it. I trust that there will be some kind of stylistic influence in what I'm doing, but it's a thing I do unconsciously while listening. To which Fred Ebb adds, we filter all of that through our own sensibility, and out comes what we do. Sometimes people don't realize that. Of course, there is always an unconscious element as well. Bob Fosse's artistic vision. Film and stage are two fundamentally different media. This difference is nowhere more pronounced than in the genre of the musical. On Broadway, nobody bats an eye when the hero breaks out into song in the middle of the action on stage, whereas in a film, such a move would be conceived as unnatural and disruptive by the casual viewers. Bob Fosse solved this conundrum with a dramaturgical stroke of genius. All musical acts grow organically out of the narrative as performances at the fictional nightclub the protagonists frequent. Fosse got rid of all other song and dance routines outside the Kit Kat Club, thus he retained the fans of musical film and theater, while at the same time attracting the widest range of audience possible. There is only one exception to Fosse's drastic measure. Tomorrow Belongs to Me is performed at a Biergarten by a Hitler youth, who is then joined by the other patrons. Even though the song is sung in English, rumors persistently circulate that Fosse used a real Nazi song. This detachment from the rest of the score by Kander and Ebb is made possible through the stylistic differences from the typical show tunes and the spatial remove from the Kit Kat Club in the film. Several people have searched for the Nazi and or German folk original since, refusing to give up when their research ends with Kander and Ebb. One comment on the white supremacist internet forum Stormfront shows that the harder it proves to find evidence for the song's German provenance, the more some people become convinced that the original is being suppressed or blacklisted as Nazi lore. Here's a quote from one user. Since the song was apparently altered for that demoralizing movie Cabaret, and considering the people who adapted and altered this song, I believe this German folk song deserves to be made available as the unaltered original German folk song and completely unacknowledged from its cabaret origins. This stubborn intransigence is reminiscent of the opinion of Mr. Galland of Plandon Heights, Long Island, who would not accept that the show tune was not a Nazi song either. Ironically, like some of the great neck parents, white supremacists, here an authentic, or after yesterday we'll probably call it a truthy, Nazi hymn in Tomorrow Belongs to Me. Others, in contrast, understand the song as a bucolic, optimistic hymn. It just so happens that Fred Ebb's brother-in-law, Burton Bernard, resided in Great Neck at the time of the scandal and came to the defense of the school principal under fire. A local newspaper published Bernard's letter to Sherman, and I have a quote, any fair-minded person reading this beautiful poetic lyric sees only a pastoral ballad suggesting future promise. This song could easily be sung by a group of young people anywhere in the world. How is it possible that the same song could be interpreted so antithetically? Ingrid Munson's concepts of perceptual agency and intermusicality might help us understand this conundrum. Listeners have a choice on which aspects of the oral experience they want to focus, the melody, the bass line, the lyrics, etc. This process of perceptual agency allows for a plethora of experiences, which are all filtered through our individual socio-political and cultural backgrounds. Intermusicality, then, is, according to Munson, the process of relating the oral signs and markers to a web of ideas and discourses we may have encountered, as well as to our understanding of history. Our brain does not necessarily contextualize our experiences accurately. Sometimes it will flesh out the details based on what makes sense to us according to our past experiences and previous knowledge. To oversimplify and phrase it more pointedly, people will hear what they want to hear. including the white power music scene, which has embraced the nationalistic ring to the lyrics in Tomorrow Belongs to Me wholeheartedly since the 1980s. So the final point, co-option, the white power music scene. 8 years after the theatrical release of Fosse's Cabaret in 1972, Ian Stewart, the frontman of the racist British band Screwdriver, adapted Tomorrow Belongs to Me into a rock and roll song for his group's album, Hail the New Dawn. While we give news about his motives and intentions, whether he was aware of the song's provenance or not is unknown, as he took the answers to his grave in 1993. What remains of Screwdriver's legacy is their ongoing popularity with other racist and nationalistic artists who continue to pay tribute to Stewart by covering his interpretation of Tomorrow Belongs to Me, a version stylistically far removed from the Broadway show's rendition. Stewart altered the melody, harmony, and rhythm of the song, which emphasizes now heavy backbeats on the drums and the driving rhythm on the e-guitars. In 2001, the Swedish singer Saga arranged Tomorrow Belongs to Me as a piano ballad, removing background noise and bringing out the changes to candor and abstune all the more clearly. The Klansmen produced a rockabilly version together with Stewart in the 90s. German neo-Nazi singers Annette and Michael Müller included it on their album Balladen des nationalen Widerstandes, Volume 4 in 2005. Wolfsrudel, Endstufe and Radikal, all of which belong to the genre of Rechtsruck, that is right-wing extremist rock bands, have added the German version Der Morgige Tag ist mein to their respective repertoires. In example 6, and on this list here on the PowerPoint, I have compiled a list of all covers by extremist rock bands that I have come across so far. It is by no means exhaustive, and it doesn't always give exact dates. This is due to the fact that not all covers have been recorded on albums, but were passed on through mixed tapes and performed at rallies before they eventually found their way on YouTube. It would be so easy to dismiss racist skinheads chanting a show tune written by Candy Randell, two gay Jewish Americans, as stupid and blissfully ignorant. Yet such a dismissal would be a mistake because there lurks a great danger behind these ill-informed groups, namely those white supremacists who have embraced Tomorrow Belongs to Me and see it as a chance to, quote, use the enemy's tools against them, as one Stormfront user put it. Andrew Hamilton at Nationalistic Countercurrents Publishing describes it as reverse engineering or even reverse culture distortion, a song by Jews intended to convey an anti-white message has been transmuted into an explicitly pro-white anthem, unquote. This deliberate misappropriation, role reversal, speaks to a conscious, goal-oriented application of agency in racist circles. Without corroborating his claims, Peter Watson repeats the myth in his pop history book, I refuse to call it a real history book, The German Genius, saying that Baumann's early song, Morgen gehört mir, Tomorrow Belongs to Me, was popularized in the 1972 film Cabaret. Tomorrow Belongs to Me, he argues, became famous among the Catholic youth movement long before it was taken up by the Hitler youth without giving any source. It is difficult to break the cycle as long as journalists and historians contribute to the confusion surrounding the provenance of Tomorrow Belongs to Me, with sloppy work providing racists with fabricated ammunition to bolster their argument that it was Candy Randell who appropriated German folk music and not skinheads who co-opted the Broadway songwriters. In terms of Pegida, Legida, and other Idas, which is patriotic Europeans against the Islamization of the Occident, it would be imprudent to underestimate the intelligence of neo-Nazis, especially in Europe. And here is why. This was posted on a racist blog after the Charlie Hebdo attacks in France. And it asked, do you think you can still control them, Ms. Merkel? Please, do not ask me who Mo is, but apparently Tomorrow belongs to him. It's a type of tribute Tomorrow belongs to me. Conclusion. So what does this case study mean for playwrights, lyricists, and composers in terms of authorship and ownership? First, it demonstrates how quickly and easily artists experience a loss of control over the work once they put it out there for the public to receive. According to French literary theorists Roland Barthes and Michel Foucault, these reader-centric interpretations are of equal, if not greater, importance than author-based readings of the work. Only the complete disregard for Ken Mandel's role as creators allowed William Gowland to contextualize Tomorrow Belongs to Me as an authentic Nazi tune, substituting intertextuality for autobiography in his letter to the editor. Indeed, whatever intentions Kendra Depp may or may not have had suddenly become mute in the face of the 100 concerned parents of Great Neck, whose perceived offense needs to be addressed in some form. Now, should performances of Tomorrow Belongs to Me be restricted to cabaret, or at least banned from performing at educational facilities? In addition to administrating royalties, collecting societies could approve and deny performance rights on an individual basis. However, Foucault warned us that censorship gave rise to the concept of authorship in the modern sense in the first place, and wouldn't such regulations prove hard and cumbersome to facilitate anyway? After all, what would the criteria for such implementations be? Could self-regulation by artists then be the answer? They could furnish controversial works proactively with warning labels or clarifying statements. However, that would require audiences to actually read them, and inevitably lead back to prioritizing the author's intention over reader reception, and not necessarily prevent misinterpretation or appropriation. In the face of the different uses and abuses of authorship presented throughout this paper, it becomes clear that while authorial intent may no longer matter, the person and background of the author certainly still do. Moreover, my paper demonstrates how important the analysis of reader responses is, especially when it involves subversive political elements. Because we can't control the reception history of a song, we need to critically reflect and evaluate audience reactions of all types. Thank you.